New Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. For musicians, what happens on the road stays on the road, unless somebody squeals. And somebody always squeals. So this week, musicians are telling stories about their travels at home and overseas. We've got Jim McCormick, John Cleary, Alex McMurray, the Pfister Sisters, and Shannon Powell.
The bus pulled off from the hotel to go to the airport, and I was in the little greasy spoon getting some of the so that's so flaky. I'm getting some more of that because every corner they got them, you know.
Right.
So I get back to the hotel. I'm thinking everybody's still in their room, and, you know. And I look around. Hey, hold on. My bag is gone.
Did Shannon Powell miss the bus from Greece? Stay tuned after the break. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Louisiana musicians routinely circle the planet, and they've got the stories to prove it. Shannon Powell could write a book about all the places he's been while traveling around the world with jazz greats like Harry Connick Jr., Diana Krall, Wynton Marsalis, and rock and roller Tommy Ridgely, among others. Make that a cookbook. Powell likes to eat.
I can cook a little bit.
Yeah, you've got a very precise palate there.
Yeah, I used to cook on the road in my room, you know. Yeah.
Did you ever see that movie Round Midnight?
Of course.
That with Dexter Gordon.
Yes.
And he's in Paris, and there's like this little place, like a little hotel or apartment building where a bunch of American jazz musicians are playing, and every time they would shoot that, you know, the hallway, some guy would come out of his room and say, "You want some ribbies?"
Yeah.
Be the greatest city in the world if I could just find some okra.
What the hell do you know about Paris, Ace? You don't do nothing but stay in that damn room in your robe and slippers cooking all day.
At least I'm doing it in Paris.
Well, that's what musicians do for years, you know. If you know how to cook, you know, you bring a little hot plate on the road. I had two of them.
Wow.
I used to travel with my pots in my drum case, in my trap case. And I've been known to put out of many hotels.
Really?
Yeah.
For cooking. You're cooking.
The maid smell it in the hallway, and she'd be like, "What's going on in there?" I said, "Nothing." I said, "I just come to the store." She said, "No, you cooking in there."
Nailed you.
I'm smothered chicken.
You cannot be serious.
Oh, yes.
You were smothering chicken in your hotel room.
Chicken in the hotel room with rice and green peas and everything. I called Harry. I said, "Harry, you want some New Orleans food?" "Yeah, man." I said, "Come in my room." Harry, come. He can't believe. He said, "Man, I got potato salad and green peas and smothered chicken." Harry said, "Man, this is unbelievable." He said, "Man, how you did this?
You making groceries on the road?"
Yes, indeed. I got so tired of eating Kentucky Fried Chicken and and Arby's and you know, I couldn't live off that stuff. And going downstairs and eating for $50, $60, eating some garbage for $50, $60, room service.
So you're making your own.
Go to the store, come back, plug up. We just have to be careful because some of the hotel rooms weren't
set up
for the plus. So you have to make sure your hot plate is not too powerful. See, you throw the power out. See.
How you gonna smother chicken on a low flame?
Look. Trust me, I did it. Trust me, I was cooking meatballs, spaghetti, everything.
Maybe you should have given the maid a little bit of your food and she would have ratted you out.
Oh, I have done that.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I've really fed the maids all over the world. Literally. Here, have a plate from New Orleans. Real New Orleans. Real New Orleans. What you tell them? Real New Orleans here.
Excellent.
And they come back, "Oh, it's so good." I said, "Thank you." Now, don't go rat me out now.
That's fair trade, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. Everybody in the band knew I cook. Everybody in the band, they called me up, "Man, you cooking today?" I said, "Yep." I said, "Come on, bring your money." I have an opportunity to play with some great rock and roll people like Mr. Tommy Ridgely.
I love Tommy Ridgely. I'm looped.
I love that song. You can't stop that. you tell him.
Yes, I'm looking high as a Georgia pine. Yes, I'm looking high as a Georgia pine. Well, I got a pocket full of money and I sure am feeling fine.
Such a good song.
Yeah.
I love it. I listen to it a lot, I have to say. I don't know what that says about me, but I listen to it a lot.
Oh, man.
Yes.
He's so funny.
He really is funny.
We had a chance to go to Greece together. I went with him.
Really?
We went way to Greece, and we opened up for Curtis Mayfield. This was years ago.
I'd like to see that show.
The bus pulled off from the hotel to go to the airport, and I was in the little greasy spoon getting some of that Sir Flaky. You know, I'm getting some more of that because every corner they got them, you know.
Right, the lamb.
Yeah, I'm getting the lamb, and you know. So I get back to the hotel. I'm thinking everybody's still in their room, and you know. And I look around. Wait, hold on. My bag is gone.
Uh-oh.
I went back in the lobby. I said, God, I said, what the big bus? He said, oh, they're gone. I said, what? So Tommy said, we got 3 blocks. And I told him, I said, look, there's something right on this bus. Because I used to talk a lot back then, you know. You know, everybody looking for the talker, you know. Tommy said, man, something ain't right on this bus. He said, man, you know what? Shannon ain't on this bus. They had to come back to get me. They had to left me.
To get you out of Greece.
Good thing Tommy realized how quiet the bus was. Oh, my God.
All because you were jamming on some lamb.
Yep. That lamb was good.
I
tell a guy in the
it.
French Quarter, I said, man, you don't have the real lamb. I've been to Greece, man.
There you go. That's right. You tell him.
That's a Winn-Dixie lamb. You got to go.
Winn-Dixie lamb.
You got the Winn-Dixie lamb.
Bad.
You know.
Yes, it's true. Oh, gosh. Well, so in terms of Harry Connick Jr., why did you come off the road? Why did you leave?
Well, I had my little disagreement with Harry's management.
Really?
That's what I tell people. You know, it had nothing to do with Harry. Just a little misunderstanding with me and his management. We started seeing different, you know, we weren't seeing eye to eye. And the ride came to an end.
Right.
You know, yeah, that's all it was.
Mm-hmm. And so when
Business
was that?
Business as usual.
When was that?
This was back in 1998, was it? Yeah, 98.
And you came back off the road and you came back to New Orleans?
I came back to New Orleans and I just started working here in the city and then start traveling out as a solo, you know, side man. Right after that, I got the gig with Winton, with the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had 2 bands going on the road at that time. He had 2 Lincoln Center bands traveling all over. And I was with the second band. Of course, Earlham was with the first band.
Earl and Riley.
Yeah. With the second band. So, and there was times when like Winton would be splitting time. You know, he'd come with the second band, he'd go with the first band. Winton was all over the place.
Hey, you know, he's got like a polygamist. He's got like a couple of wives in these bands, you know?
It was great.
Wow.
And then right after that, I joined with Miss Diana Krall.
Yeah.
And then I got a gig. I was doing a little work with Mr. Herb Ellis, a wonderful guitar player. I did some stuff with him until he got really ill.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been nonstop since Harry.
It seems like it's been nonstop.
Yeah,
it really does. It's nice
God
to be in demand,
that.
Isn't
oh,
it?
Yeah, well, thank God for that.
Okay, here we go.
Shannon Powell and Wynton Marsalis never really said goodbye. In the lead up to Super Bowl 47, they played together for CBS Sunday Morning. The Baltimore Ravens and San Francisco 49ers took the field in the Superdome that day, but the hometown players rolled out, what else, when the Saints go marching in.
refuse to shine. When that big old sun refuse to shine, I wanna be right in that number. Oh yeah, when the saints go marching. And I once I had a playmate. He meant the world to me. But when I went out and found religion, my playmate turned his back on me.
That was the one. Shannon Powell and Wynton Marsalis.
Sing, 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 sing,
sing.
Everybody start to sing.
Sing, sing,
sing, sing, sing.
Now you're starting to
sing. Sing, 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 sing,
sing.
Sing, 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 sing.
Now everybody start to sing.
Pop, pop, do you bow? Pop, pop, do you bow? Pop, pop, do you bow? Wow, wow, wow.
Debbie Davis, Holly Benson, Amissi Miller, and Yvette Volker are the Pfister Sisters. They've sung for everyone from prisoners at Angola State Penitentiary in Louisiana to European audiences. Yvette Volker keeps the travel log.
Well, we don't travel as much as we might would like to because there's always been a child, at
right.
least one, usually several.
Although, to be fair, my kids travel really, really well.
Yeah,
that's
but
good.
It does,
and have.
You know,
and have.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it tips the scale.
Right, but nobody ever asked Keith Richards, well, so where are
right.
the kids? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Well, because he probably wouldn't even know.
Exactly.
Where
are you managing the kids, you know?
Well, I mean, Amissi was the primary mom to his first daughter, and she came with us on our first road trip.
That's fantastic.
You know, so we, mm-hmm. you know, we've... Yeah.
We've almost never had a rehearsal where there was a child hanging on somebody's leg and
yes.
crying. It's like, we don't know how to do that.
Yvette, you write a blog that sort of talks about what road life is like for a group. And, I pulled one of your blog entries from the Times-Picayune newspaper. This is back from 2008.
Yes.
When you were in Germany.
Oh, okay. Oh, I like this one. Okay. Today, Thursday, a group of us meet to go to the zoo. It's huge, a little overwhelming, and very exotic. Lots of animals I've never seen before, including several polar bears and a panda. Some of the buildings, like the giraffe house, date from the 1800s and are beautiful, but some of the enclosures for the big cats and the monkeys are small and reminiscent of the old Audubon Zoo. Home again to an interesting email. The hotel has reported Debbie to the cabaret, they're paying the bill, for apparently not keeping her room clean enough. It seems that the cleaning ladies have complained about actually having to clean her room. What? Have I missed something here? I have been summoned to a meeting to discuss a solution to this problem. I am so tired of trying to figure out what's a cultural issue, what's a translation issue, and what really needs to be addressed. Next time, road manager for sure.
I love that blog post. You don't, you know, it's hard to, you're right, it's hard to tell what's a cultural issue, what's a serious issue, what's not, and...
Or just translation.
Just,
I mean, because the Germans spoke very good English, but it very often we were talking right past
each other. We just didn't get each other.
By mere best of shame, please let me explain. By mere best of shame means you're grand. By mere best of shame, again I'll explain. It means you're the fairest in the land. I could say Bella, Bella, even say
Debbie Davis, I'm giving you a chance to rebut.
Well, to rebut
the Germans.
I have to. Oh, boy. I told the same story on a blog that I was writing at the same time, which was not on the Times-Picayune's webpage.
Yeah, well, I was trying to be kinder.
For reasons that you will understand if you read my blog. I took the kids out to the playground one day and came back to find the hotel manager and both of the maids in my room with a camera.
Mm. You caught them in the act.
I did. Yeah. I caught them in the act.
Oh, no.
To be fair, I don't know if it was a cultural thing or a misunderstanding or if these people were just a bunch of jerks and they were looking for the slow gazelle to jump on, which you're traveling with two kids. You're the slow gazelle. And I realize now that I was an easy mark. But, you know, the kids were great. And other than some crying that I did perfunctorily after this incident with the hotel manager, it was, I try to look back on it as a good trip, but, you know, I think my rider will be much more specific next time.
Changing the weather, changing the sea. From now on, there'll be a change in me. My walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me is gonna be the same. I'm gonna change my way of living, if that ain't enough. I'll change the way that I strut my stuff. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray. There'll be some changes made today. There'll be some changes made.
That's the Pfister Sisters with There'll Be Some Changes Made. Back in a minute with more travel stories from some of Louisiana's finest musicians. Stay with us. It's Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. This week, we're hearing stories from Louisiana musicians about their experiences on the road. A song by Alex McMurray can take you anywhere you want to go, from a runaway train to a World War I battlefield to the soggy bottom of the sea to, well, Texas.
Lying here wasted with the cold running through me, throwing my past on the fire. The shadows stretching away to forever, and the boys are about to retire. The smell of the diesel, the feel of the damp, have come to be my own. I'm holding steady, but I ain't near ready to go back to Texas again.
But life is often stranger than fiction. At one point during his career, McMurray traveled to the other side of the world to become Captain Sandy, singer of sea shanties.
Well, where is me wench? Me nuggy, nuggy wench. She's all gone for beer and tobacco. Well, her tail's all torn out and her front is ripped about. And her to look it out for better weather.
How did you fall into sea shanty work?
Well, like all good stories, it involves Disney.
Really?
Sure, yeah. About 10 years ago, maybe a little longer, I got this job working at Tokyo Disney Sea,
which of course.
It's the park next to Disneyland.
In Tokyo.
I was there to sing sea shanties for Japanese tourists.
And so did Disney call you directly for this job?
No, I was hired through a guy named Adam Shipley. He's a, you know, he's a showbiz impresario from way back. But he had a guy at Disney who every once in a while would call him up and say, hey, I need a guy, you know, who can... juggle plates on sticks, or, you know, I need a ventriloquist act, you know.
This is great.
And so one day the guy called Shipley and said, you know, I need a guy who can, like, play guitar and banjo and sing sea shanties, you know.
Wow.
For the Japanese park. And so this guy, Shipley, he called our friend Glenn Hartman, accordionist for the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars, and said, I got a guy who's looking for a guy who can... sing sea shanties, or, you know, play the guitar, play banjo, and sing.
Thank God.
And so Glenn said, what about Alex? And Shipley said, without missing a beat, he said, no, it's Disney, Glenn. Years later, Glenn was like, oh, I got you that gig, he said.
There you go. So anyway, was he implying that you weren't wholesome enough for Disney?
I think the wholesomeness was part of the equation, yeah. There was maybe not enough wholesomeness. So like 3 weeks later, I was on a plane going to Japan. This is the best part. I called Shipley and I said, Shipley, am I going to need to know sea shanties? He's like, I don't think so, but here's somebody you could call. So he gave me this number, somebody in Orlando, and I said, listen, I'm going to be going over as Captain Sandy. I need to know if I need to know sea shanties going in. They're like, oh, no, well, they'll show you everything on the other side.
Nice.
Are you sure? They said, absolutely. Don't even worry about it. I just go, enjoy it.
The Japanese have sea shanties licked.
Yeah. They've got it all figured out for you. Okay. So I get there, costume fitting and orientation and all this stuff. And then like finally we're in this rehearsal. We're sitting in like in some big room with a conference table. And there's all this chattering back and forth in Japanese. And I'm there with the other Captain Sandy, this guy named Newbern Johnson. And finally the translator looks at us and says, so make sea shanty. And I'm like, you mother. And so John, Newbern John, that's his name was, he called himself
the other
John.
Captain the other Captain Sandy.
He was like a 64-year-old guy from Gainesville who knew about 350 sea shanties.
No
he knew
way.
Like six versions of the same song. He immediately starts, oh, he plays, you know, John Kanaka or something like that. And then they turn to me, and I don't know. I mean, I think I remember from my audition, like, Blow the Man Down. You know,
okay.
Like two verses of Blow the Man Down. And I think I might have repeated the first verse just to...
just for emphasis.
Just to like... And then so, you know, John kind of like looks at me, okay. Then he does another one. And then that was all I had. So I like, when it was my turn again, I did one of my own songs.
Good, good.
Some song which is...
Let's
nothing,
hear it.
You want to hear it?
Yes.
Okay.
You bet.
So bad as graveyards go, a little damp, but listen close, so you can hear the whispers of a sailor's ghost. On the day I sailed to sea, my mama cried, my daddy prayed, but it saved me from a banker's wage. So on the sea I stayed, on the sea I stayed. I sailed the seas to learn the stars, but I soon forgot them. On the day I came to rest upon the soggy bottom, once I was a handsome man, I had a girl in every port, I lived to love them, I loved to leave them, I loved them just for sport, I loved them just for sport. I sailed the seas to learn the stars, but I soon forgot them. On the day I came to rest upon the soggy bottom, come ye sailors, drink until you roar. Don't you know your money ain't no good no more?
tracks where the cold winds ever blow. See them in the violet hour, paying what they owe. As a lad, I loved my kin, but I soon forgot him. On the day I came to rest upon the soggy bottom, upon the soggy bottom.
Alex McMurray, you are a very talented man.
Well, thanks. But then Newbern turns to me and he says, well, I've never heard that one. And I say, wink, like, yeah, John, well, it's a little obscure, you know. I got it from blah, 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 you know. And he's like, okay, yeah. So he lets me, you know. He keeps my, you know, keeps it cool. And then afterwards, he's like, listen, I've got a book you can borrow, you know.
Oh, nice.
So
what's so ironic is that Upon the Soggy Bottom was one of the songs I was going to ask you to play.
Oh, really?
Without ever knowing the story behind it. It's a gorgeous song.
Oh.
It really is. I wanted to ask you, and this might be a creative challenge. I was wondering if you might be able to sing Captain Sandy.
Captain Sandy.
Your song, Captain Sandy, in a way that will not get WWNO's operating license revoked.
We can try.
Do the Captain Sandy dance. Wear the Captain Sandy pants. Listen while he raising rants. He's Captain Sandy. Captain Sandy lives alone, works alone, sleeps alone. Listen to him whine and moan. He's Captain Sandy. Oh, where's the skipper been? His grip on things is loosening. And what's behind the toothless grin of Captain Sandy? He doth command a crew of one. Bit by bit the captains come undone. Oh, why does Captain Sandy drool? He failed mousketeering school. Ah, face down in the swimming pool is Captain Sandy. Oh, Mick and Min and all the gang, they all came down to see him hang. And someone in the crowd got up and sang, it's Captain Sandy. Oh, and he was lifted from the noose. He grabbed his Captain Sandy boots. Lock your doors, he's on the loose. He's Captain Sandy. Drink your troubles by the cup, my friends. Captain Sandy breaks before he bends. Ooh, Captain Sandy disappeared. And he's gone, they say, with all of his gear. But sailors' hearts still know the fear of Captain Sandy. Captain Sandy. Captain Sandy. Captain Sandy.
Fabulous.
It's the wailing of lost souls, ladies and gentlemen.
Singer-songwriter Alex McMurray. Where's he going next? Back in a minute.
I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. When musicians go a-travelin', there's no telling what might happen. Take Woody Guthrie. Some of Guthrie's best songs were gleaned from his travels around the United States. His observations from the road have inspired generations of musicians, including Luke Winslow King. Nowadays, Winslow King calls New Orleans home. But when a man is born in a place called Cadillac, Michigan, he's bound to stay in perpetual motion. Winslow King and his band retraced some of Guthrie's steps.
I dropped out of college my first semester, and I went on a road trip all around the country performing a show of Woody Guthrie's music with two other friends. And that's kind of when I got back into my roots of songwriting and started kind of developing this polarity within my music, that I was into jazz improvisation, but also just like really rustic Americana.
I mean, obviously people love Woody Guthrie from coast to coast, but there's something about, you know, I mean, the area of the country where you grew up, where, you know, I mean, that seems very well suited to the study of Woody Guthrie and the sort of promotion of Woody Guthrie songs.
Yeah. On that trip, I was really torn because I had been playing bebop in school and studying jazz and more theoretical sides of music for years. And then I went off on this other tangent of like, if you're playing Woody Guthrie songs, you only need a tin can and the will. Like, you don't even need an instrument to play some of his music.
Yeah.
And it's just about expressing the emotions of the people of the America and being inspired by the land and its people and traveling and having all these stories. So when I finally got to New Orleans, my two worlds collided because I always had loved people's music like Woody Guthrie, and I also loved jazz improvisation. And when I came here and I was exposed to ragtime jazz or traditional jazz more deeply, I discovered that it was people's music because you could bring a melody home with you.
That
you could remember the melody and that you could dance to it and relate to it, that it wasn't too sophisticated, but it also had these elements of improvisation. So
exactly.
It was really great that my journey, it kind of split me in half. And then when I got to New Orleans, I realized that those two worlds could be the same.
But your entry into New Orleans began with Woody Guthrie and a crime. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I was traveling on this Woody Guthrie show, and I parked my van with all the equipment that the whole band was traveling with in front of the Pink Hotel on Ursuline Street, right near Ursuline and Rampart. And
in the French Quarter.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And John Boutte was our host at that time. He was my first friend that I met in New Orleans.
The great troubadour.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I met him through a mutual friend when he was touring with Cubanissimo in Michigan.
Yes.
So when we came here, he said, come on down. I'll make sure y'all are taken care of. He says, just park right in front of the hotel on Ursuline. Don't worry about it. And he apparently didn't know that there was instruments in the van. And we woke up the next morning to broken glass on the sidewalk. And we received the van back in about 2 or 3 weeks with mm-hmm. none of the instruments.
Yeah.
But I always say to people that was just enough time for me to fall in love with New Orleans and decide to move here. So
sure.
It was a blessing in disguise.
So what was your best Guthrie song?
Oh, wow. The week after the car got stolen, Hard Traveling was my favorite one to do.
I've been having some hard traveling, I thought you knowed. I've been having some hard traveling way down the road. I've been having some hard traveling, hard rambling, hard gambling. I've been having some hard traveling, Lord. I've been riding them fast rattlers, I thought you knowed. I've been riding them flat wheelers way down the road. I've been riding them dead enders, blind pastures, kicking up cinders. I've been having some hard traveling, Lord. Well, I've been hitting some hard harvesting, I thought you knowed. North Dakota to Kansas City, away down the road. Cutting out wheat and stacking out hay and trying to make about $1 a day. And I've been having some hard traveling, Lord. I've been working at Pittsburgh Steel, I thought you knowed. I've been pouring red hot slag way down the road. I've been blasting, I've been firing, and I've been pouring red hot iron. And I've been having some hard traveling, Lord.
But I was a little bit young singing about, you know, slinging that Pittsburgh steel and, you know, cutting that straw, stacking that hay, all that stuff. I didn't really know much about at the time, but I was going for it anyway. We just traveled out to the Grand Coulee Dam on our tour of Washington, and we were exposed to the music he wrote when he was out there and really re-inspired to sing this song, Pastures of Plenty, which is one of my favorites now, that really sings about the migrant workers in America. And it's a gorgeous, gorgeous piece. Maybe I can share a little bit later.
No, maybe you can share like a little bit now.
Sure, I would love to. Yeah.
It's a mighty hard row that my poor hands is hoe. Yes, my poor feet have traveled a hot, dusty road out of your dust bowl, and westward we roll. Your deserts was hot and your mountains was cold. California, Arizona, I raise all your crops. Well, it's on up to Oregon to gather your hops. Dig the beets from your ground, cut the grapes from your vine, to set on your table your life sparkling wine. Green pastures of plenty from dry desert ground to the Grand Coulee Dam where the water runs down. Every state in this union us migrants have been. We will come with the dust, we'll go with the wind. Well, it's always we ramble this river and I, along your green valley I'll work till I die. My land it depends with my life if it be, 'cause my pastures of plenty must always be free. My land I'll defend with my life if it be, 'cause my pastures of plenty must always be free.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the Pastures of Plenty by Woody Guthrie.
That's a beautiful song.
Thank you. Yeah, I always just feel like in my travels and reading and learning about Woody Guthrie, I'm always just chasing him, just trying to catch up with all the places he went and all the great songs he wrote about people, you know? It's a really high bar to try to rise to.
Before heading out on tour, Luke Winslow King served us one more song for the road.
I wrote this on a train in Italy like 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. and then pretty much threw it in the trash and never liked it. And then I found this groove that I really liked for it, and I've been kind of reviving it. And yeah, I'd love to share it with you. It's called Traveling Myself.
When I go traveling all by myself, wanna be nobody, babe, wanna be myself when I go traveling. Traveling by myself. Can't love you, baby, less I'm being myself. Ain't I pay no ticket, ain't I pay no fee, ain't I work for no man, I get it all for free when I go out traveling. Less I'm being myself. Don't you hear me singing? Howling in your square. If you like my song, Rapunzel, won't you let me down your hair when I go traveling? Oh, traveling by myself. Yeah. I can't love you, honey. Less I'm being myself. Less guess I'm being myself. When I go traveling all by myself, wanna be nobody, baby, I just wanna be myself when I go. Love you, baby. Less I'm being my, always by my, less I'm being my.
All right, that was Luke Winslow King with Traveling Myself. Louisiana music travels well, and no one knows that better than John Cleary. As a sideman, solo artist, and with his band, the Absolute Monster Gentlemen, Cleary has more miles on him than Magellan.
Like driftwood washed up on shore of a strange and foreign land, tide broke, got nowhere to turn. If nobody minds the storm, Lord have mercy on me.
That's Bringing Back the Home from John Cleary's Grammy Award-winning album, Go-Go Juice. Cleary has come a long way as an artist and traveler. He may have been born in Kent, England, but New Orleans is his hometown.
My mum just would melt every time, you know, if Teddy Buckner's version of West End Blues would come on. She'd just stop whatever she was doing, close her eyes, and just start swooning. And that, well, you know, my family were really moved by music. And when you observe this stuff when you're a little kid. My musical taste came really from within my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in England in the 70s, growing up when I did, we had two music programs that came on.
Okay.
On the television. We only had three television channels. And at 7:20 on a Thursday, you could watch Top of the Pops, which would be the charts, chart hits. And that was the 70s. It was the era of glam rock, and I hated the Bay City Rollers and Gary Glitter and Sweet and all these daft bands. But there was another program that would come on called the Old Grey Whistle Test, which was, you know, more adult, sophisticated rock. And that would be guys doing 10-minute noodly guitar solos, and I didn't really like that either. And I was a guitar player. I started playing guitar when I was a kid. My dad showed me all his, you know, they'd have sessions down at the pub, and they'd all come back home afterwards, and there'd be music in the front room, everybody playing. And so that's how I learned to play.
Were there any songs in particular that you remember and you remember very well as songs that kind of helped nudge you into the direction of either playing guitar or of taking up music professionally?
Well, there was at school we had one record player and about five records. It was a little parochial village school called Collier's Green. I think there were about 30 students in the whole school.
Wow.
And they had a tiny little record, little box record player. And one of the records was Can't Buy Me Love. This would have been about 1967, I'm guessing, or 68, 69, sometimes. So the record was already like 5 or 6 years old. But the guitar solo kind of rang a bell. And I was only a kid. I would have been about 7 or 8 years old.
The Beatles.
Yeah. And then when I was about 14, punk rock happened, and sure. That was really exciting. Sex Pistols and the Damned and the Clash. So me and my mates would bunk off school and get on the bus to Hastings and go and see the Stranglers.
We came across the West Sea. We didn't have much idea of the kind of climate waiting. We used our hands for guidance, like the children of a preacher, like a dry tree seeking water, or a daughter, nice and sleazy, does it every time.
Every punk gig they would have a reggae band. All of a sudden, there's this explosion in great reggae music. So we got to see these hit bands that were coming over from Jamaica. And that's still one of my big passions. When I'm relaxing, I listen to Caribbean reggae music.
That's lovely. And so your friends, did they have the same aspirations that you had? I mean, to become musicians or?
No, there was no musicians around. I was the only one, really.
But it must have been kind of odd to them, the idea that you guys are hanging out, you're watching, you know, I mean, reggae, you're listening to punk, and you are playing, you know, sort of New Orleans music. Or...
I know. When I get home, I'd be listening to Professor Long and trying to figure out, you know. Big Chief, you know, all this stuff. So there were two different compartments to my music. The punk thing was dreadful, but they actually played with a lot of energy.
Yes.
And that I really picked up on. And then when I came to New Orleans, when you see 70-year-old men getting down in a street parade playing, they got all the energy, all the soul, and they could play too. It's like, thank you.
It's true.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting in England.
Punk plus musicality.
just the attitude where you dig in and you play hard. You know, you work, you work, you bust a sweat.
Ready? Here it is.
Down here, trying to make it while you're all, it's not breaking. Oh Lord,
That's Getting Crazy Up in Here by Grammy winner John Cleary and the Absolute Monster Gentleman. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Matt Aguiluz, Sean Collins, Jason Rhine, and Rick G. Nelson. Our theme song was written and performed by James Booker. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, the Arts Council New Orleans, Surf Song Realty of Orange Beach, Alabama, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible, thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.